it is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Drag and a miss, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss, struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 295. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. I wish I could say we've got a lot of good stuff to get to here on the podcast, but no sir, no ma'am, not happening. The Phillies went into Atlanta and got their butts kicked by the Atlanta Braves, losing two out of three. It could have been a lot worse, too. They could have gotten swept. They actually also could have won two out of three in this series. It was a weird series down in Atlanta, very unsatisfying, and this team obviously has a lot of issues to work through here, and so we're going to chat about it here over the next hour or so. Joining me, as he does every Sunday night, is the head guy at The Good Fight, Justin Clue. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how are you, my friend?
You know, if you're the kind of person who takes joy in little things, especially in the wake of demoralizing output from your local team, I gotta say, watching footage of Bryce Harper interact with the Braves mascot Blooper was utterly charming. Obviously, you want to see better performances on the field, but they put together like gags that he actual things he had to partake in, and he was just game to mess around with the Braves mascot this weekend and partook in some like skits with him on the field. And I don't know, it was just like in a vacuum, it was like, that's funny, that's great, good for him. It's fun to see him like have energy and be into it, but then you know the games happened and kind of just made all that a footnote.
Maybe if he used some of that energy on the field, Justin, you know, he could have.
Oh, it's going to be one of those episodes. Yeah,
it's going to be one of those episodes.
Yeah, no, yeah. Why he didn't use the opportunity to set the Braves mascot on fire was beyond me. And frankly,
it's a missed opportunity. Yeah, missed opportunity. And welcome back to Liz Rocher. Welcome back to the Sunday Night Podcast. Liz Rocher is back. She is with us. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, of course, does fantastic work for Yahoo Sports. And after a couple of weeks on hiatus as she got her living situation taken care of there in Ohio, she is back and better than ever. Liz, welcome back to Hittin' Season. How you doing?
You sounded almost mournful there for a minute. Welcome back to Hittin' Season on this incredible weekend of Phillies baseball. Today we watched the Phillies get clobbered. I'd like to say maybe the Phillies just didn't actually play today and we don't know it.
Well, they didn't play today. I mean, there's no doubt about the fact they didn't play, but they were on the field getting their butts kicked by Atlanta. 15...
Body snatched or some kind of Vincent D'Onofrio Men in Black situation.
I mean...
where people are wearing their skins and no one knows. I don't know. There are a variety of things that could have happened. Our Phillies are somewhere
else. If you
else.
Ever needed, if you ever needed a clearer example of there's no such thing in baseball as momentum, you just had to watch this series. And really, this series against the Atlanta Braves summed up the entire Philly season. I mean, they lost the heartbreaker on Friday night, the most excruciating loss of the season. There's no doubt about the fact that the game on Friday night was the most excruciating, painful loss of the season. I woke up the next morning mad, like pissed off. I haven't felt that way after a Phillies loss in quite some time. I've been annoyed the next morning, and you know, but usually, generally speaking, with sporting events, I can put it behind me. You know, it's just I've grown up a little bit in that area, but not with this game. I was still mad Saturday morning, and although I did kind of take a little bit of a longer view, I had to give the Braves some credit because Atlanta is playing really well right now, and they did a good job coming back, but that was awful. And then they come back and return the favor on Saturday night and steal a win from the Braves with a comeback in
Good
the ninth
Lord.
Inning. And you think, all right, you know, maybe the Phillies can still, you know, win these the last two games of this series and leave Atlanta feeling good about themselves. And then they get their pants taken down and caned 15-1, out hit 19-6 in the game. I know. And here's the thing.
I'm novel over here, guys.
I'm not in the mood for people online telling me the optimistic thing right now. I'm not here for the bright side. Okay. That's not what this podcast is going to be about tonight, guys. If you're looking for a podcast that's going to make you feel better, The only thing this podcast is going to do is let you know that there are some people who are just as annoyed as you are by what's going on. Just a status report, Phillies are 39-32, 2.5 games back of Atlanta. The Phillies are still 5 up in the Mets, 6 up on the Nats. I'm going to talk about the wild card because now that we're in second place, it's apropos. They hold the second wild card by 2 games over the Rockies and Diamondbacks, 2.5 over the Cardinals. But I don't know about you, Justin, but it felt like after this series was over, the Phillies are 2.5 games behind Atlanta, but the gulf between these two teams feels bigger at the moment. Just give me your general thoughts, your takeaway on the Phillies after this this disheartening series against Atlanta.
You know, I'm just wondering what the amount of time really is before we start clamoring for changes. I know we've been doing it for a little while now this season. I'm just like wondering how long it was, probably about a month before we really started demanding, or at least saying that, like, somewhere down the line, this team's going to have to make changes. And somewhere down the line is fast approaching. I think we learned that in this series. We've learned it in many series, but this one especially stung because it was the Braves. They are the team that's most capable of burying the Phillies right now, being not only in their division, but the team they're going to be competing with in their division down the line. So losing directly to them is directly damaging to the Phillies' playoff chances. On top of that, we've been talking about this stretch of 26 games against divisional teams with the Dodgers waiting on the other end, like I described last week, but it's really not that. It's 26 divisional games and then the All-Star break. This season's going by quick, I feel like. We've been describing it in like stretches, and there was that big stretch of tough teams, and then now it's interdivisional teams. And it's going by quick. And the mid-season is when a lot of teams reevaluate and try to figure out who they are, what kind of team they are, and what they need to either succeed or what they're willing to give up to plan for the future. And the Phillies are a team that's designed to win this year. And the team we saw on the field this weekend, that was largely the same team we've been seeing. Scott Kingery, I know we're going to talk about, he's breaking out. He's been breaking out. He's a main difference, but 2019 Phillies were on the field again this weekend. Like Aaron Nola struggling, bullpen, giving up leads, offense, not appearing for large chunks of time, injuries rampant to key players. Like that's the same story. And what we saw was that story isn't going to play well against the Braves when they're in their final form. You know, we talk about how hot the Braves look right now. I wonder what the Phillies look like, the 2019 Phillies look like, when they're as hot as the Braves. Because they have not been as good as the Braves are right now. And I feel like they could be. We just haven't met that team yet. Even with what they have now, I think they could compete with the Braves. I'm not saying they could necessarily dominate them, but I think improvements need to be made. The Braves went out and got Dallas Keuchel. That was at least something. But the Phillies, we just haven't met them at the level the Braves are playing at. We haven't met them at their best, I think, is my point here. And we learned that once again this weekend in the most brutal of fashions. So, I just feel like we didn't learn anything new other than this team as is, when they're not playing to their ceiling, can't match up with the Braves. They, you know, that's going to be a lesson we keep learning. They're going to play the Braves at the end of this stretch of interdivision games, and it's going to be in Atlanta again, and then it's going to be the All-Star break. So hopefully something changes. Hopefully string a few wins together here against lesser competition in the NL East. But what we're looking at right now isn't going to cut it. And I think that we just had that confirmed this weekend.
I don't even really know what to say at this point. You know what I mean? Like it was that bad on Sunday. And to me, it feels like it's a 2.5 game lead. I know that's one of the positive things I saw people saying on Twitter. It's like, well, it's just 2.5 games, and you know, it's still early June. I mean, they're still in this, and they're 7 games over 500. They're about where we thought they'd be, and that all may be true, but it still doesn't make me feel any better about where this team is, because you know, I think there are some red flags right now with the Phillies. What are you feeling after this series?
I feel like eventually those aren't going to be excuses anymore. They can't be. Eventually, the Phillies will run out of time. It's not May anymore. It's mid-June. You know, May, you could still say, oh, well, it's early. But you can't say that anymore. Like, what we're looking at, the inconsistency, this is who the team is. And partially, it's because the players who we need to, you know, produce consistently aren't doing so. But it's also because the bullpen is severely hurt. And if you look at why the Phillies are sucking, it's not just because of that. It's because there isn't enough depth. I mean, granted, they've gone through every arm they have, but that should that's a problem. If at this point in the season, yeah, they've gone through every arm they have in the minors, to the extent that they're going to, they would have to make a, I think they would have to make a major move to get anybody here. So
no, yeah,
I know, you know, eventually the excuses will, they'll never stop. There are people who will criticize them when they win the biggest game of the year, and people who will, you know, make excuses for them until, you know, they're blue in the face. But eventually, for people who are sane, the excuses will, they have to stop soon. Like, 2.5 games out is fine, but it could be more tomorrow and the day after that. They have to actually start winning and gaining more ground back, and the way to do that is to win games. And they are, seems really simple. It's very difficult, I'm sure. I don't know how they fix it. I guess is my problem, is I don't know how they fix any of this.
It's really healthy to maintain a positive outset. It really is, especially, yeah, because it's mid-June. I totally understand that, but this is, I brought this up last week. This is I feel like a more challenging stretch than the last one, because they are so easily able to plummet right now, and this was a really bad way to start off that stretch. Not only did they drop 2-3, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but they dropped 2-3 in really spectacular fashion, once losing in the ninth inning and once just getting blown out of the water. I mean, it's not incredibly correct to say this, but you could make a backdoor argument that the reason the Phillies didn't get swept is Hector Neris, even though he's the reason they lost the first game. Like, this is how, yeah, backwards things are with this team,
Hector,
right now.
He's always been that player, though.
And all they're going to do in the next couple of weeks is play teams that could put them further back in the standings, while the Braves presumably stay pretty hot. There's no reason to think that's going to end anytime soon. So, you know, feeling even more negative than usual, despite the 2.5 game deficit seeming small, this was a team that was in first place for a while up until this point. It's a very clear sign that the lack, their vulnerabilities are starting to come back to bite them in the ass. And I think that's starting to happen. And they have to be noticing it if we're noticing it. So changes very clearly need to be made. The team as is isn't going to perform at the level of the Braves, who are the team they're going to be competing with down the line. You know, there's a lot of guys on this team who are not contributing or not going to be a part of any playoff team moving forward. And I think we know that now. I think after 2.5 months of this season, and in some cases, multiple years of watching some of these guys, and I'm not just talking about the pitching staff, I think they know who doesn't belong on this roster anymore. And presumably they're formulating a plan to correct that, because they've, yeah, seen up close what the best team in this division looks like. Because right now it's not them.
Well, let's talk about the players who shouldn't be on this roster at this point. That was one of the questions I wanted to ask. I think when we look at what they did on Sunday with the pitching, obviously starting pitching is the big problem right now. Their decision to go with the opener and start Vince Velasquez and then use Cole Irvin and Jared Eichhoff after that was a disaster. It was just an unmitigated disaster.
I think it's unfair. I'm sorry, I got to cut in here. I think it's unfair to call it the opener, and I mean unfair to give them the credit of saying, like, oh, well, they're using the opener, right, as if that's like an, right, intelligent move they made. This was a bullpen game, which means
it was,
which,
you're,
which,
right,
is punting,
totally right,
just giving up for, like, you, yep, start, you have a bullpen game when you have no other options, and their other option, right, was Jake Arrieta, who I don't have a lot of faith in, but he's a better option than stitching together 9 innings through Cole Irvin, Vince Velasquez, and Jared Eichhoff, 3 guys who have shown they are not capable of throwing in the major leagues.
Yeah, that's, yeah, not before, the opener. But, if they use the opener, yeah, it would be a consistent thing. You don't use the opener for a game when, yeah, you don't have an actual starter going. It's so ridiculous and borderline insulting that they call it that.
Well, I mean, the media is calling it too. I mean, people talking about the Phillies using the opener just because you start a relief pitcher.
By they, I mean doesn't anybody. Mean, I mean, it's, right, listen, I get why they're doing it. Calling it a bullpen game is not great. It doesn't make anyone feel good, and disguising it by calling it the opener makes it sound, like you said, Justin, intelligent.
Somebody needs to break down what the difference is between an opener and a bullpen game, because they just don't use that term bullpen game anymore now. Now it's just some sort of smart move the manager is making in every case, and it's not in every case. It is not.
Well, no, it's not. It's the same thing it's always been.
Yeah, I mean, I did this on Twitter on Friday trying to point out the differences, and the difference is that the opener is used as a strategic measure to try and get a team that is particularly strong one way or the other, left-handed or right-handed, to have to use a different lineup that day, like the Phillies did with the Dodgers. That was the opener when they started Jose Alvarez against the Dodgers. It was to break up all those left-handed hitters that the Dodgers had, and it was pretty effective. It worked. You saw a much different LA lineup, and that's how it worked. That's how it's effective. The Braves don't allow you to do that because they have lefty-righty differences. The Braves are not going to give you a different lineup if you try to go with a left-handed reliever for two innings. So
why should they?
This was,
hitting like crazy.
Yeah. No. This was a bullpen game, and they didn't have to. Even if. Before the game, I wasn't any more confident about Jake Arrieta getting the start today than I was Velasquez or Irvin, because I really thought, hey, maybe Velasquez and Irvin can do this. I was absolutely wrong, but I would have gone with Eniel De Los Santos. Why are they making this harder on themselves than it has to be? Call up the AAA pitcher whose normal day it was in the rotation. Do I think De Los Santos is going to be a future All-Star? No, but he's a starting pitcher who was on his normal rest, and you at least have some upside there. You're at least throwing a guy the Braves have never seen before. We know how much the Phillies struggle against pitchers they've never seen before. Why don't we give that a shot? You know what I mean? Why? Let's throw Daniel De Los Santos at the Atlanta Braves. Let the kid give a shot. Maybe he gives you five innings of three-run ball or something like that. It's sure a hell of a lot better than Cole Irvin's 6.84 ERA. Jared Eichhoff, who's given up 18 home runs in his last 28 innings.
No.
And Vince Velasquez, who just stinks. None of these three guys should be on this baseball team at this point, Liz. Cole Irvin, Jared Eichhoff, and I'm telling you, Vince Velasquez should not be on this baseball team at this point.
I'm still holding out a little bit of hope for Jared Eichhoff. I don't know what his problem is. I don't know what his problem is in our
face. I think he's just
and
he's
I refuse
shot.
To give up. But Vince Velasquez, you can stick him in a giant trebuchet and just point it toward the ocean at this point. He hasn't. What has he shown this year? I think he had a really good start. He's not even starting anymore. He's not done anything in the bullpen to make me think, hey, great.
Nothing.
No. I mean,
no.
Guys, we've been talking about these three, not Cole Irvin as much, but two of those three guys for years now. We've been using every blip of success as a reason to consider maybe things are going to turn around. It has been years. And we all wanted each of their good starts from this year to be the sign that things were going to change around here. We were so desperate for one of these young pitchers to have their breakout season. And when Pivetta got demoted, we sort of just jumped on Eichhoff because he came up and made one or two good starts. Like he just happened to. But it's not happening. It's not happening. And if this team is really in win now mode, they got to make changes that are a little more merciless. They were willing to send Pivetta down after five bad starts.
Yeah.
We can't.
What is Velasquez still doing
here? Well, he probably thought the same thing we did, that he had the raw stuff. He had the velocity that maybe he could serve as a reliever at some point. John, we talked like last week.
They know him more than us.
The new setup man. It's just not happening. It's ready. Yeah. It's time to just crumple it up.
Nope.
Start over. Do something else.
Well,
I can't.
Here's
I'm
the problem.
At their starting rotation, I don't even know what they do to fix this.
Well, that's the problem. Is that their top two guys are having worse seasons than their three and four guys. Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta have not provided the stability at the top of the rotation that you need if you're going to be a playoff team. So, yeah, obviously the number five starter is an issue. And there are some moves the Phillies could go out and make. They could probably trade for a guy like Tanner Roark or Mike Leake or Andrew Kashner or Sonny Gray, somebody to take the back end of the bullpen. You're not going to have to give up much. And I think they have to do that soon. I don't think they can wait until Friday. You know what I mean? Like, Friday is when the number five spot in the rotation comes back around again. You can't do this again. You can't scotch tape this together again. But at some point with Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta, I agree with you. Nick Pivetta is not going anywhere in the rotation. He's pitching pretty well. Zach Eflin has obviously pitched like an all-star this year. But Nola and Arrieta, you're not knocking these guys out of the rotation.
No.
I don't care how bad Arrieta pitches. He's making too much money, and he provides a veteran presence. He's got a lower ERA than Aaron Nola, which still is blowing my mind.
God.
Aaron Nola this weekend was the most disheartening start of Nola's season so far this year, that game on Saturday. And so I agree with you. I don't know exactly what you do to fix this right now, because other than having Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta just pitch better and going out and getting a number five starter, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's like, do something. And I think the question is what? they don't have anybody that they really want to part with, nor do I have anyone they necessarily think they should part with right now. At this point, it's ride or die with most of who they have. They can do another, who is it, Brad Miller? Is that the dude they just picked up?
That's the guy they picked up.
They could do another Brad Miller and pick up some rando to stick in the bullpen, which they're probably going to do. But that doesn't really fix anything. The guys that we see are the guys that we're going to be with for the rest of the season, more or less. I don't see them doing anything major at the deadline, because for who and for what?
Well, when you say, what do you mean by major? I mean, like, is acquiring Jeff Samardzija major to you? Because, like, I would...
Right. I guess it would depend on who they gave up. I mean, I guess it's true with everything, but I don't think they give up too much for him. I guess, I mean, that would be something they could do, but that's not something a team in win now mode would do. They would do something big. And I'm looking at it with the dichotomy of they're going to do something big or they're just really going to do nothing. And I guess Samardzija is sort of on the nothing end of things.
Right. Well, he's on that same level of the Mike Leakes and the Andrew Kashners of the world, where it's just,
sorry,
like,
Jeff Samardzija.
This guy was promising and were good at one point. Obviously, those days are behind him. Maybe his numbers are good enough now that we can give up a couple of crappy prospects for him or whatever.
Send Cole Irvin. I'm fine with that.
Well, ask people on Twitter. They'll package up all the bad Phillies and assume that means one, you know, below average but somehow salvageable starting pitcher will come over.
Is that not why we have war?
Yeah, that's the.
That's not the reason.
It's exactly the kind of trade you're talking about. I mean, you're right, but at the same time, I just enter this mind space, and I try to avoid it. But I just enter this headspace of you know what? Anybody else, at least, maybe the change of scenery theory kicks in here, and we just get like somebody who's excited to be back in a pennant race, and it's just like, this is great, and like pitches their life away. And that's like the difference. But I mean, that's another roll of the dice. So you're right. Maybe this team just isn't in win now mode. Maybe they thought they could be, and they're learning with what they got isn't going to be good enough to win now. And the changes they can make aren't going to make them good enough to win now. So it's going to just be like, well, either we turn into sellers at the deadline and trade prospects or players we didn't want to trade to get a higher caliber of pitching and just kind of see where that takes us. Or this team just really isn't in win now mode. I don't know. I mean, it seems like these are more dramatic statements than I came on this episode tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think it is about that sort of dichotomy. It's just, you know, how I was approaching it. But because they'll do some things, but it'll end up being one of those, this team is just trying to patch it together, you know, and the wins that they get are from some of their genuine talent, but none of it's working at the same time.
And there's something that we need to address that is a big part of what's going on here, and we'll do that next after we take a quick break right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season as myself, Justin Clue, and Liz Rocher bitch and moan about the Phillies after a really brutal series in Atlanta, which the Phillies lost 2 out of 3. And we're trying to figure out how this team moves forward. And again, this is not a podcast where I'm looking to hear a lot of positive, you know, reinforcement. I kind of want to just feel bad for a couple of days, and you know, the Phillies are going to get right back at it. That is the beauty of baseball, is it's 162 games. You know, they got to get right back on the field tomorrow night, and they could take 3 out of 4 from the Nationals, and suddenly I'm feeling a lot better this week. But at the moment, that doesn't seem possible, because not only do we have the issue of some players underperforming, like we talked about with the pitchers who took the mound on Sunday, with Aaron Nola on Saturday having the absolute worst time to have one of the worst starts of his season. And luckily the Phillies pulled that game out. But what's really been a problem, and one of the reasons why Vince Velasquez, we had to look at him as a possible helper, as a setup guy, and why we've had to use guys like Jared Eichhoff and Cole Irvin this year, is injuries. This team is still very banged up. They probably don't lose the game on Friday night if they have their full complement of relievers. Maybe they do, but they certainly have a better chance than if Vince Velasquez and Edibre Ramos are dealing in high leverage situations like they were on Friday night. And on Sunday, you know, I think, you know, they went with a bullpen game because, again, they really didn't have a whole lot better options. But, you know, the bullpen has been torn apart, and the lineup really didn't have much of a chance on Sunday either, because Jay Bruce was out of the lineup. He hurt his hamstring this weekend. JT Realmuto took a foul ball off the Twig and Berries on Saturday night. And so it could be that he's out a little while. I think that I saw that the Iron Pigs promoted a catcher. So I think you might see a DL, that's probably not DL, an IL move for JT Realmuto on Monday. I hope not, but God help us if that's what's going on.
I mean, something like that happened to Yadier Molina, I think last year. Shockingly, getting to use that type of terminology in your headline gets a lot of clicks.
Yeah, took one on the
coconuts.
Somehow
he became even more powerful.
That's right. And the bullpen should be getting some people back soon, but not soon enough. And, you know, if the offense, how many more outfielders can this team lose? Jay Bruce apparently should be okay to play on Monday or Tuesday. So thankfully, it doesn't seem like he's going to be out for a long time. But the Phillies might have lost one of their most important players in JT Realmuto. We'll see. We'll see how that goes down. But it's just injuries with this team. And also, I think we need to ask the question, is this simply a matter of an injured Phillies team running into a red hot Braves team? You know, like the Braves came into this series red hot, having won 7 games in a row, and they won a bunch of games during that winning streak in exactly the same fashion that they beat the Phillies on Friday night, trailing late, scoring 5 in the 8th. They've scored more runs than any team in baseball in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings this year. Atlanta has been doing this all season long, so I wonder if this is just a simple matter of the Phillies running into the Braves at the worst time, when the Braves were really, really hot and the Phillies were really, really down because of injuries. And maybe we can make ourselves feel better in that way. But Liz, what do you think about that? Does that play into this at all, how good the Braves have been lately? Because I think you have to give them a little bit of credit here.
Oh, sure. I mean, you remember those teams from 2010, 2011, 2009, what did they do a lot of? They scored a lot in late innings. They made comebacks. Yeah. They won on walk-offs. The Phillies in the last couple of years haven't done that a lot. These Phillies haven't done that a whole lot because, I mean, they've won a lot of big games. They've won and lost a lot of big games. You know, lots of lopsided scores. They haven't done a whole lot of coming back in that fashion. You know, but good teams do that. Good teams score late. They have the depth. They have, you know, the stamina to do that. They can beat pitchers late because they're just better. And the Phillies are sending out dudes they probably don't really believe that much in. And, you know, you have to take into account all the injury. You have to. But the Braves are doing what good teams do. And the Phillies are doing what bad teams do. And that's lose badly. Oh my God, today's game. I can't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I was doing Father's Day stuff today. I mean, I had my middle son's birthday party today, and I was out doing all. I mean, so watching the game today wasn't even a thought.
I watched
golf.
It
was not going to happen anyway. Yeah, watch the U.S. Open. I mean, it was just, boy, if you're choosing golf over a Phillies game, I mean, that gives you every indication you need about. And I like golf.
It's the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I know. The U.S. Open's
fine. I'm also a golf fan, so.
Yeah. I worked for the PGA Tour Network for SiriusXM for a couple of years, so I got really into golf there for a couple of years, and then I stopped working there. And
I don't actually have to do this.
I don't have to watch this anymore. No, but Justin, what is your thought on that? I mean, is this simply bad timing? And like when these teams play each other again in a couple weeks, it might be totally different, but. Right. I mean, they just seemed to run into a buzzsaw this weekend.
I think it was also that we saw them sweep the Braves to start the season. So clearly the Braves weren't feeling it yet. They weren't at full power yet. Whatever they needed to get there, though, they found, and they're there and the Phillies aren't. And you have to count the injuries the Phillies have succumbed to into the equation, especially for the 15-1 loss. I mean, I said that in the recap of the game two that they won, that the following day meant not only a bullpen game with 3 of the Phillies' worst pitchers getting action, but also they would be without Jay Bruce and JT Realmuto in the lineup, which meant Nick Williams, Andrew Knapp, and Michael Franco were all going to be the bottom third of the lineup. I mean, you can't really get more feels like a loss than that right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, you definitely have to count that
True.
As a factor. However, like I said, at the top of the show, you saw a lot of things in this series that have been problems the whole season long. And obviously, like you said, Aaron Nola's not going anywhere, and I don't want him to go anywhere. I do want him to be Aaron Nola again, and he just hasn't been. And you just chalk that up to another one of the Phillies' problems, that their pitcher they should be able to rely on the most has been nothing but unreliable. Then you have, yeah, same thing with the bullpen, same thing with the disappearing offense, same thing with every one of these guys, one through six in this order, is a good hitter. They just objectively are good. And when they drop off, they can't seem to do it at the same time. They all seem to be somehow, like, you always hear about, oh, this guy's so hot right now, but then you check the stats and somehow they're all hitting 250, 260. Like, it's just not coming together for them. And that's what I mean, that, like, we haven't seen this team at full power yet. When it happens, it's going to be terrifying for the rest of this division, but it's not happening yet. And they managed to get the first place without reaching that point, which is kind of interesting. But that's why you can't help but talk about making tweaks and making changes, because if they make the right change, you know, it feels like they could be a step closer to being that team. You never know when somebody's going to get hot. You never know what a change of scenery is going to do for somebody. It just, it's too easy to imagine with this team. And that's what makes it so frustrating. They're tantalizingly close to being as dominating as we imagine them being, and they're just not doing it. So I think part of it is just repeating the same problems they've had all year that we've learned from week one, and part of it that made it even worse, that turned this from a possible series win into a definitely today loss, was the X factors you're describing, the injuries and you know, the bullpen game and everything that created those issues.
But I will also say, and that's all absolutely true. But I mean, as you're looking at the Braves lineup, man, Ronald Acuna and Freddie Freeman are better, both better than anything the Phillies have. I mean, there's no disputing that, right? I mean, both those guys are top of the line superstars and probably will be for a long time. They're both better than anything the Phillies have, correct?
I think that's
pretty much.
That's absolutely.
I mean, we did that last year too.
I mean, I was trying to make the argument at the start of this year. You know, we kept repeating the narrative of, look, the Nationals got their Juan Soto and the Braves got their Ronald Acuna and the Phillies didn't get their young stud. So they went out and bought a bunch of talent, and like that tracks. But also I tried to make the argument that, yeah, they did. It's just his name was Aaron Nola and he doesn't hit. And now this year, if you were somebody who agreed with that, he's not that guy right now. He can be again, but he's just not that guy.
To be fair, I want to talk. Kingery is hitting 244. I mean, I'm sorry, 344.
Scott Kingery. I want to say it now. I'm going to jump in and just
Scott. Go ahead. We'll do
Scott Kingery.
I really
want to talk about him because we shit on him last year so much, and I want the chance to make it right. So let's start doing.
In the last week, Scott Kingery is hitting 500 with an 1814 OPS.
Those are made up numbers.
Go ahead and say it's a small sample size. I said it was a week. Shut the hell up. He had 22 at bats. He had 8 extra base hits. Half of them were home runs. He is the tiny little battery at the heart of this offense right now. And frankly, he's this team's all-star.
Yes.
Yeah, he has saved the season. Among players with at least 120 plate appearances this year, there are 305 major league players with 120 plate appearances. His OPS of 1,049 is 8th in Major League Baseball. So, I mean, that just – he and what's amazing is –
I disagree.
Just
Scott Kingery is the best player in baseball. I just stated all the evidence to that fact. So.
You know me. I like numbers. No, but, I mean, there's nobody hitting better than him right now, and he's saved – he has – in many ways saved the season a couple different times with his ability to get extra base hits, just a ton of extra base hits for him. Nothing is cheap. Everything he's hitting is hard. I can't remember the last time I saw a player struggle like he did as a rookie and then come back in his second season and perform the way he has. And to do it while playing multiple positions and playing those positions well enough that we haven't said, man, Kingery's defense is really a problem. I mean, he's played third base adequately. He's played center field adequately. I don't think he's a plus defender at either position, but you haven't thought about
him.
He's fine at those positions. And at that production
level, doesn't matter where you put him, he's still doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because he had that great start, and then he got injured, and we were all worried that he came back. You know, like, God, there's so many good players on the Phillies right now. Where are they going to find time for Scott Kingery? Remember those
days? It was the
days?
Same thing with Jay Bruce when they that game we criticized Gabe Kapler for putting in Nick Williams when Jay Bruce was scheduled to come on. When a guy's hitting that well, you do whatever you can to keep him in the lineup, especially with this team right now. You got to get him in there. And yeah, he's serviceable. Great. This team's need for center fielders. If you're a serviceable center fielder, oh, my God, get the MVP award in that man's hands.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Kingery has been unbelievable. He has basically been the best player in this offense for the last month or so. And because Bryce Harper and Rhys Hoskins have been uneven, this year. The numbers, the overall numbers for both of those guys are okay. But Reese Hoskins' numbers overall are better, I feel like, than his actual production. Does that make any sense? I mean, when I think about Reese Hoskins, I don't think of a guy who's been super productive this year. But his numbers tell you that he's still got a slugging percentage, I think, over 500. He's, you know, got an on-base percentage that's solid and a solid batting average. It just doesn't feel like he's been all that impactful this season. I mean, maybe it's just because he's had a few big games, but am I crazy about Reese Hoskins just kind of not having really provided the impact I thought he was going to provide this year?
I think that's not untrue. You know, he's hitting near Bryce Harper, who hasn't really been a terrible bright spot. And I think they're both better when they're both doing well together. And so if it's just, mm-hmm. you know, Hoskins out there hitting and there's nothing happening before or after him, like last year sometimes, he's just sort of left alone on an island and you kind of forget, oh, he had a hit that inning.
I'll be honest, just looking to, this is a very casual perusal of the numbers, but the home runs that Reese Hoskins does hit typically come in games where the Phillies are down by one or two runs, frankly, or ahead by one or two runs. So when he does hit home runs, they come in a timely fashion. And with 15 of them this year, he's among the team lead, if he's not the team leader.
I think Bruce is the team leader at the moment, but as far as guys who've been here all season, Hoskins is leading the team. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just, it feels like, that's why it's so perplexing. This team is endlessly frustrating because you just look at who's on it and you're like, all these guys are good. So just like think of it. Just take a step back from all the bitterness we're trying to concoct and send into the world right now. And just consider like a moment after after the All-Star breaks, the Phillies were so used to seeing them be a second half team anyway. Imagine a case where Reese Hoskins gets Reese Hoskins hot. Bryce Harper just hits, let's say 270, 280, gets into that range. JT Realmuto is himself, his normal self. Jay Bruce gets enough playing time to keep keep something close to the hot pace he got here with. Scott Kingery maintains the success he has and hopefully comes to define his whole career. And they make a tweak to the pitching staff that gives it some new life. I mean, that's a pretty good sounding team, especially with Gene Segura in the lineup. I mean, yeah, it really hurt to lose Andrew McCutchen, and it's really awful that this team lost Odubel Herrera in the way that they lost him. This is that there were some really stupid and in McCutchen's case, unlucky losses to this team, but they went out of their way to acquire a ton of talent. There's so many good players on this team. It's just, that's what makes this so flummoxing.
Flummoxing. That's a great word.
There's no way they can't, mm-hmm. they can't catch fire the way the Braves have. The Braves, like, you know, their pitching staff is not full of guys you recognize. It's not full of guys who are known league wide as just what was it? Sean Newcomb, who spent a bunch of time in AAA. And like, this was his first start since going down to the minors. I mean, you can't tell me the Braves have a pitching staff that doesn't mirror the Phillies in anonymity or unproven track record. It's just that theirs is coming through right now. And the Phillies is not.
Yeah, no, and that's and it all comes back down to Aaron Nola for me. I mean, and what we're seeing from Nola is 2009 Cole Hamels. I mean,
it's so sad because that was a heartbreak season for me because you could just hear in his voice every time he spoke. He's like, "What happened?"
The main difference there is that Cole Hamels had World Series MVP in his pocket while he was doing that, and Aaron Nola was very good.
He finished third in the Cy Young voting. I mean,
he just had the best Phillies pitching season since like Roy Halladay, the best one.
I had to say it. I'm sorry.
No, because you're not wrong. You're not wrong, but it's the only comparison we can make because the Phillies haven't really been that successful.
Well, and the thing with Nola's season this year is that the velocity is the same, but the command isn't there. But you know, some of the break on some of his stuff isn't there from time to time. But there's nothing that you see in Nola where you think, boy, he really looks injured or anything like that. It's just he's off. It's just off, and he doesn't have an explanation for it. And I heard the same things coming out of Cole Hamels' mouth in 2009 where he just seemingly didn't have any explanation. I know there's a lot of people who believe Aaron Nola's jump in innings last year is causing this. And I can't say that's not the case, but I don't think you can point to a causality. But people look at Cole Hamels.
He doesn't seem hurt.
What's that?
He doesn't seem hurt. Like, people are saying, what if he's hurt? I'm like,
yeah. Well, is it, is, I don't, is know. Innings jump necessarily mean, I don't know if it necessarily means hurt, but effective. I don't know why it would change anything when you've had a full off season, but for whatever reason, Hamels had a huge jump in 2008 and in 2009 struggled. Same thing happened. Same thing with Nola, it seems, but I can't, no, nobody can point to that and say that's definitely the reason. And I'm not going to sit here and say that's definitely the reason. All I know is he has a 4.89 ERA this season. And among 77 qualified starters, that's the seventh worst ERA in baseball.
I don't know if anybody is actually, I know many people have submitted the idea that he's hurt. I think it has more, less to do with people thinking, oh, look at the way he's moving, he looks hurt, and more to do with the fact that we've seen this narrative before where a guy who is good is suddenly not good and no one can figure out why. And then we find out at, in the offseason, they're like, oh, it turns out he was pitching with a broken neck the whole time. And the team just like didn't tell anybody about it. Just seems like that is a trend that we've seen before. And this does sort of fit that mold. Hopefully he turns it around and we don't have to talk about it anymore. But yeah, I can see why people would guess that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's when anytime a top starting pitcher falls off the cliff like this, you immediately think injury because it doesn't compute. It doesn't make any sense that Nola, who still has the same velocity, he's the same pitcher essentially, suddenly can't get anybody out, is suddenly giving up home runs at an alarming rate, is unable to get through the fifth inning in so many of his starts. And there was it looked like in May he was finally getting it back together. He had a very good May, and now in June it's all fallen apart again. And it's frustrating that they don't know why. I wonder what you guys think about changing the pitching coach, about letting Rick Kranitz go, who, by the way, is now the Braves pitching coach, and Chris Young staying as the Phillies pitching coach here in 2019. I mean, I don't really know how effective hitting coaches and pitching coaches, how much they actually impact a player's performance on the field. So I don't know. I mean, I've had that floated to me, but you know, wondering whether or not the move from Kranitz to Chris Young has made a difference in any of these guys. Because Zach Eflin is better than he was last year. Nick Pivetta, I think we still don't know exactly what Pivetta is. And Arrieta has essentially been what Arrieta was last year. It's essentially Nola who we're looking at here as not knowing exactly why there's been such a big drop off. So I don't know what you guys, Justin, what do you think about the changing of pitching coaches? Do you think that has had any effect on any of these starters, or is it impossible to tell?
I mean, it's definitely impossible for us to tell. I think it's worthy of a look. It's a solid theory, especially since, yeah, now that with the little cherry on top of Kranitz being the Braves pitching coach now. And this was
their pitching is garbage, though. Let's remember that Kranitz hasn't done wonders for them.
This was the case of the Phillies. Somebody wanted Chris Young, and the Phillies were like, okay, no, he's our pitching coach now, and let Kranitz go. And the Braves jumped on Kranitz immediately, right? Yeah. That little fun hiccup, that does seem pretty manipulative.
I'm going to have to bleep it. That's fine. The Braves, man.
They really nailed that move. I can't remember if Chris Young is a member of certainly not like the Driveline Baseball school, but like the attached to Gabe Kapler in some way school of acquisitions coaching wise the Phillies made. But they definitely were letting it known like through little trickles of hires that Gabe Kapler was definitely making moves to get more people involved in the coaching staff with whom he had history, with whom he had worked with before, with whose ideas he certainly is aligned and subscribes to. We all know that means a lot more modern takes or analytical takes on things. And, you know, regardless of how you feel about that, it does always strike me as a bit of a gamble to hire an entire coaching staff that is in the mold of your manager, especially if they subscribe so dramatically to a certain school of thought. Because then it's just like, if things don't work, you don't really have an option other than to revamp everything, because everybody's teaching in the same style. So again, though, like we've learned many times over that these coaches aren't teachers in a lot of cases, even with younger players. I still, and I think, John, you do too, subscribe to the idea that the major league coaches have a pretty minimal impact, and their hirings and firings are their firings more so than their hirings are typically ornamental, and certainly
Yeah, they feel good.
They're
kind
things
of thing.
Teams
yeah.
do to make it seem like a change has been made, when in reality, you know, nothing, not a whole lot of changes. So I'm not going to say I believe that is going to be that's going to wind up being the source of the problems. I'm not saying it isn't, but my belief is more so that either Aaron Nola's got some sort of head games Cole Hamels syndrome going on after the higher profile he got after last season, or maybe there's some kind of discomfort that he's going through that we're just not made aware of yet. But I'm not ready to say that it's for that reason, though. The conspiracy theory certainly adds up. Like, there's a reason we're talking about it. And I actually had forgotten until you mentioned it, about that whole little Braves squeezing Rick Kranitz out of the Phillies coaching staff and scooping him up. What a sick move.
Yeah, we wonder. It's not all part of the plan. They really wanted Kranitz all along, so it's kind of, they used the long con. Well, we want Young. Oh, no, you can't have Young. We'll let Kranitz go. We got our guy, you know. It wouldn't surprise me. we'll take a quick break. Up next, I'm going to steal an idea that we've used on BGN Radio, the Eagles podcast. We're not going to do this every week, but obviously after a series like this, I just kind of wanted the thought of people on Twitter. Oh, boy, I'm not sure that was a good idea, but we'll do something called Three Words up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So obviously after a series like this, everybody feels like they need to vent. I felt like I needed to vent. I kind of wanted to just get a sense of where people thought the Phillies were. And obviously, when you give people just three words to describe their emotions, you're going to get a lot of F the Phillies. I mean, that was a big part of, you know, what the F, you know, there's a lot of those here. And so for sure, you know, on Twitter, that's what you're going to get a lot of here, guys. But a couple of these were interesting. Let's see. At Planetary AOTP said there's 162 games. Obviously, that's true. This is, you know, three games out of 162 games here. But, you know, I just feel like if that's how you're looking at the season and you're not looking at what you actually have and the trend and, you know, kind of comparing as you go along, you're going to get bushwhacked, you know. And I think that happened to us a little bit last year, is, you know, we were just kind of following along with the team, seeing them win some games and not really seeing some of the problems that we're building. And, you know, I don't want that to happen with the 2019 team. You know, we got to talk about the things that are kind of holding this team back. So I think it's more than just 162 games. I mean, I get where the mentality is coming from there, Liz, but the don't worry about it, relax, it's a long season. That's not what I want to hear this weekend.
Well, it's another excuse. You know, it's another excuse that eventually just isn't going to hold water, because the number of games they have are running out. They're eventually not going to have any left. And when you can say about any series, well, there are 162 games. When you string them together, it actually has meaning. You can't look at every single game or every series in isolation. You have to look at it in the sum total, you know, with everything else. And when you lose a game here that you should have won, or, you know, you let late runs happen and, you know, they steal a game, those all add up. The games that the Phillies should have won because of their bullpen, I guarantee you someone is going to write that or has already written it. And it, when you look at those games that a better bullpen could have saved, maybe even just one or two or three out of what I'm going to guess are probably going to end up being like 15 games, if not more. That's a season. Like that's a postseason. Yeah. That's a playoff appearance. And so, you know, while you can say those things at the beginning, you have to stop saying them by mid-June. You have to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not early in the season anymore.
Sorry,
you know,
planetarium
right.
guy. I reject your tweet.
At the _J_Bink said, fire Matt Klentak. But Justin, I think that brings us to an interesting point. I heard a lot of people saying this weekend, you know, that the Braves have just done a better job of developing and building a roster. I mean, the Phillies, you mentioned it, had to go out and kind of, you know, hire a bunch of mercenaries in order to get talent on this team. And the Braves went out and they got Acuna as an international signing and developed him, while the Phillies spent big money on Jalen Ortiz a few years ago. And that hasn't borne any fruit at all. It's again, still early for Ortiz, but because he's still just 19 or 20 years old. But I mean, Acuna was a big hit for them. You know, and some of the other young players they've developed. You know, it's Ozzie Albies is a decent player. They've developed Freddie Freeman, for crying out loud, a superstar, one of the five best hitters in the National League. I mean, they have a couple of young pitchers, Mike Soroka and Max Fried, who are both good young starting pitchers that look pretty good. And I think the big thing that I would have an issue with, Justin, is, and we all talked about this on the podcast last year, when Charlie Morton signed a 2-year deal with the Rays. How does that happen? How were the Phillies not in on Charlie Morton at that price or slightly more expensive? You know, how they let Craig Kimbrell and Dallas Keuchel go here. I mean, they went and they spent money on Andrew McCutchen and David Robertson. McCutchen was great, but they targeted him because of his track record of staying healthy, and they targeted Robertson and his track record of staying healthy, and you know, maybe that was a bad strategy. So is anger at Matt Klentak warranted? Is the honeymoon worn off from the Bryce Harper signing?
I mean, yeah.
Are you laughing at me for asking the question?
Having flashes of previous conversations.
Yeah,
about
that's exactly
Ruben
where
Mara.
I'm coming from here, is that it's definitely just some people probably had to Google the name of the Phillies GM just to know who they were mad at. I'm not saying this person did. I totally get why people would be frustrated with Matt Klentak. He's sort of the embodiment of all the moves the Phillies have made that haven't panned out. He's overseen, what, 3 drafts since he was hired for the Phillies? You know, it's just... he's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Let's just acknowledge that from the start here. I don't think he's not on a hot seat, not yet. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like it would be pretty amazing the Phillies first year as a real actual possible contender. Matt Klentak was on the hot seat by June, 16th. That would be a little crazy. I get it. I get like that some people are going to channel their frustration towards him because of the moves the Phillies have made and haven't made. I wonder about that as well. It is frustrating about Charlie Morton. It is frustrating about Craig Kimbrell. And it's not just frustrating because they didn't get him. It's frustrating because you just don't know why. You don't know what they have mapped out on the dry erase board or whatever that says, like, no, Craig Kimbrell equals no. Even when you're watching Hector Neris give up the lead in the game one of this series, you know? So, I totally think that's a valid
great point.
Frustration. And if you want to be mad at Matt Klentak, hey, go for it, because he's one of the authors of this team, and this team is not performing, and they've had opportunities to improve it. They've also hit on some opportunities, and injuries aren't fair. So to see, JT Realmuto get hit in the dong, that sucks. He's like a really important part of this team, but he was also acquired by Matt Klentak in a deal that nobody should regret. So
Jay Bruce, what a deal he made for Jay Bruce.
And also Bryce Harper, who again hasn't been Bryce Harper-y to a wide extent this year. But guess what, guys? He's still a good baseball player. And also, he's not going anywhere for a while.
Right,
so
exactly.
So strap in. But again, if that's a reason you want to be upset with Matt Klentak, totally valid at this point. It's been a frustrating season. Guys haven't come through, and like some teams you see that happen to every season, a team that seems equipped to really be a threat. And the Phillies, they've been in first place for a while, but they've been a frustrating team this year. They're just that team that's had a lot of bad luck, had a lot of injuries. And I think we can only hope that the next big stretch, the second half, the team, that shifts to another team, and we see some of the acquisitions and guys the Phillies are going to stick with turn around and see the pendulum swing the other way. Until then, if you want to be mad at Matt Klentak, you definitely should be, because that tracks.
I have a different person to be mad at. John, you were talking about the Braves and their luck in signing international prospects. Let's not forget that the Braves went through a major scandal that saw their GM be banned for life because of the only thing they could prove was a 3-year circumvention of international signing rules.
True.
That's all they could prove. So when you look at the team built from international signings and an extension for one of those players that is criminally low, still makes me angry to think about. Remember the scandal and how you can't say things aren't fair because now they're here and you can't do anything about it. But let's all just mention that about the Braves every chance we get, because it sucks and it's unfair.
I'll also say this, because it's really stuck in my crawl since it was originally uttered. But Andy McPhail's little press conference earlier this offseason.
You can't stop talking about it.
I can't because it's really, it really
it was awful.
He just came out and was just like, everyone should understand that we might not get Bryce Harper. Also, I am so far away from operations. I'm not a,
yeah,
literally
I have no
said,
idea
I think
how
I'm not
it all
a Philly
works anymore.
Guy.
Yeah.
No, he really does not want anything to do with it. Opposite of our friend David Montgomery. My goodness.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying this to defend Matt Gledek, but if you guys want to rechannel some of that outrage towards Andy McPhail, I think he's due for a little. I think he's a fair target. He seems to be exactly the guy everyone is mad at when they're mad at someone for not being from Philadelphia. He pretty much came out and was just like, "I'm the opposite of everything you guys like," and everyone was like, "Okay, whatever." if you want to channel some of your irrational outrage towards anybody, give a little to him. I think he's earned it.
Oh, let's talk. Do a few more of these. That's good. At Philly Bird 1979, missed on Keuchel. That remains to be seen. We'll see how good Keuchel is with the Braves. But at OB from NJ tweeted, "Everybody calm down. I don't want to calm down right now, but I get the sentiment." At Quigley_Ben, "Just get healthy. That's a big deal." "Braves are better" from at Mikey P 9908 4828. That's a bad Twitter handle, Mikey P. You gotta pick your Twitter handle game up. "Turn the channel," which is I think something a lot of people did. Jessica Posner one tweeted that one out. Let's see. "Must make trades" at Ty Johnson News. Ty Johnson's, I think he's a Missinelli producer for 97.5 The Fanatic. "Must make trades." That I do agree with. We talked about that a little bit earlier. They have to make some moves here at some point. Shore up third base or get some starting pitching in here, just even if it's for the back of the bullpen.
I like Treblaw. Were you going to get to that one?
Is it the one "Toilet won't flush"?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, Treblaw brought it on that one. That was a good one. That was my next one here. "Where's the bleach?" At Robbie Cap, pretty good. So, I mean, some definite good ones for three words. We'll do this every now and again.
Let me ask you guys something. So we're sitting here talking about how, look, there's no move the Phillies could really make. Like, the Phillies need to make a move, but also there's no move to make. Also, they've run into a bunch of bad luck. Injuries are happening. Something's wrong with Aaron Nola. No one knows what it is, but something's clearly wrong. Bryce Harper is like a 250 hitter making $330 million. I mean, do you see this team getting as hot as the Braves are now in the future? Do you see that happening?
I'm asking this because you're just asking for more negativity.
We're sitting here talking. We're offering no plans for that the Phillies can do. To sit there and wait for them to get better and like be effective and be the players we've been waiting for them to be. And I'm just asking, do you see that happening? Because there's been so many little things. Like, I feel like we've seen so many Phillies players thrown out at the plate this year. So many times that the Phillies have been walked off on and never walked off anybody else. So many things like that where it's just like, yeah, they were in first place for so long, but it just seems like they get beat in these frustrating, dramatic little ways that mean that like that just translate in the long term into them just never being as hot as the Braves are.
They've lost on 5 walk-offs this year and have not had a single walk-off win this season. So you're not wrong about that one, Justin. I actually saw that number this week. It's after the game on Friday. And the whole reason that you go on long winning streaks is, A, you either have great starting pitching that can maintain consistency for a few weeks stretch, or you have an offense that's just on fire. And that's what the Braves have gotten over the last 3 weeks or so. Just their offense has caught fire. Everybody in the lineup is hitting at the same time. What a concept for everybody in the lineup to be hitting together. And maybe the Phillies can get hot and do it that way with everybody coming back and maybe if they add another bat. Scott Kingery becoming a big part of this offense has been a huge lift after Andrew McCutchen went down and Michael Franco, after his first few weeks, turned out to be a mirage. But I mean, it's just with the offense being so up and down, with Cesar Hernandez being a guy you could not get out in May, and then all of a sudden a guy who could not buy a hit in June. There's so many guys in the offense who are like that. The inconsistency is crazy to me. And unless Aaron Nola figures it out, no, I don't see them going on a hot streak like the Braves. My only hope has been maybe they don't need to. maybe that the rest of the National League East comes back to the pack like they had been before the Braves got hot, and that a 92-win season, a 91-win season is enough to win the National League East, because you don't have to get super hot in order to finish 20 games over 500. I mean, the Phillies were at 11 games over 500 just a few weeks ago, so that's not that long a climb, but... Man, we had been waiting for one of these teams to jump out and thinking to ourselves, if one of these teams gets hot, they're going to put some distance between them and the rest of the division. And right now, I agree, it looks like the Braves.
Yeah, we're at that moment in the season where the rubber's meeting the road. It's not early anymore. Thankfully, it's not late. But this is where some of the most meaningful baseball of the season is played. You know, a lot of teams are trying to overcome injuries. The Phillies aren't the only ones. And you see who's able to do it with the depth of their bench and how everyone is able to pick everyone else up. And the Phillies are failing at that super duper hard. And I would love for that to stop.
Well, I would.
Because it makes watching baseball games really unpleasant.
If we're going, just to look into the future here, because we talked so much
why?
About it. Phillies have 4 games against the Nationals coming up. And with an exhausted voice and a dry throat, I will just submit this, that the Nationals are a team that have been scrambling to just stay at the level they're at. They split a series with the Padres in San Diego. They split a series with the White Sox in Chicago. And they just split another 4-game series with the Diamondbacks before they actually pounded them today, 15-5. But they're coming into 4 games with the Phillies now. Being a disappointing team themselves that has worked hard to stay only as disappointing as they've been thus far. They are a team that is hitting .283 as a team against lefties, that is third in all of baseball. Fortunately for the Phillies, they've never heard of a left-handed pitcher. So the fact that the Washington Nationals are hitting .243 against right-handers as a team, Anthony Rendon or not, you know, maybe this is where the Phillies pitching finally finds a way through. Who knows? You get Jake Arrieta, Zach Eflin, Nick Pivetta, and then Aaron Nola gets a chance to be the Aaron Nola comeback story again. But in that stretch, as I'm sure John was about to say, you got Patrick Corbin, Eric, how do you say his last name? Fetty, Max Scherzer, and Steven Strasburg. So God help us.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's with Corbin, he's really struggled over the last few outings.
Thank God.
He's had a tough go of it since early in the season. Fetty is a right-hander, so I don't know, but he's got like a 3.68.
He started strong, but he's floated very bad, further down to earth from his strong start. And you know, Scherzer.
They probably don't have much of a chance to win that game. But Strasburg's up and down. You never know what you're going to get from Strasburg.
Strasburg's up and down, but he loves killing the Phillies. Yeah. He is he's very good at it.
Yes, he is. Well, I guess, as we're looking ahead to this Washington series, I mean, you got to hope that Jay Bruce can get back on the field. Hopefully JT Realmuto is not missing behind the plate, because if we're going to see a heavy dose of Andrew Knapp Nick Williams at the bottom of an order, it's going to be tough.
Has to be the steepest drop off on the roster, right? From Realmuto to Knapp?
It's got to be. Woof. It's got to be. Yeah, of all the players, he's the one they could least afford to lose for an extended period of time. He's played so much this season. Really, probably too much. He's probably played too much this season, Realmuto has, but...
Knapp isn't very good.
Right. They've had to play him. I mean, he's too important not to have him in the lineup. But again, this is a stretch where we have talked about it. We haven't talked about the death spiral Gene Segura has been in over the last month or so. They need guys. They need Segura. They need Harper, and they need Hoskins, not just to do okay, but to get hot. They need these guys to get hot, to really start smoking the ball together consistently. The middle of the order start to take some of the pressure off the bottom of the order. I mean, it's just, we know this. It's easy to say, but whether or not they'll actually be able to pull it off this week, who knows? All right, listen, guys, we've got to wrap up. Any final thoughts, Justin, before we finish up here?
Anybody see Martin Maldonado's tie that he wore on Father's Day on his catcher's gear?
No.
It was pretty sweet.
I will have to check that out.
Okay. We'll have to check that out. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
Yes, I have 2 quick final thoughts. First, the only thing that I'm going to thank that tornado for is for saving me from talking about Jay Bruce, because I don't like Jay Bruce and I did not like that trade. And I'm glad it saved me from saying that in real time, where people could point and laugh at me when I was wrong. And second,
thank you, Tornado. I guess
for that one thing, literally that one thing.
It's like a natural disaster for Liz to hold her tongue on Jay Bruce. Yeah.
And the second thing is, my father's name is Bruce, and has greatly enjoyed having someone who shares one of his names, you know, on the team. He texted me the day after the Bruce trade went down and said, "So what do you think? If I married Jay Bruce, should I go by Bruce or Bruce squared?" My father is amazing, folks. Happy Father's Day to him. Don't listen to this, but happy Father's Day to him, the greatest father on the planet.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And
happy Father's Day to you.
Yes,
well, father among us.
Thank the you. Only father on the podcast.
Thank you. That's right. Thank you very much. It was a great day with the boys, and we had a lot of fun. It's always very cool. Father's Days are always very cool. So thank you guys. And unfortunately, we're sorry the Phillies were not able to help make your Father's Day more pleasant. But hopefully, we've all become adults enough so that they don't ruin Father's Day when they go. When you know, frankly, I losing a 15-1 ball game is. It's much more relaxing. Like, I knew they're down 5-0. I don't even need to pay attention to that. This is nice. I can afford to just put my phone down for a few hours, not have to keep track of the score all day long. So obviously a win would have been nice, but what are you going to do? All right, folks, listen, that'll do it for episode number 295 of Hitting Season. My thanks to Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, my podcast pals on Sunday nights. And folks, again, if you want some bonus content for Hitting Season, make sure to check out our Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittingseason. And tell a friend about the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Make sure that you subscribe, leave a rating and a review if you haven't done so. That would go a long way to helping us get more popular amongst the kids. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hitting Season.